This Is Your Life, episode 48. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dreamed it would be when the world was younger and you had everything? Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I'll be talking about the five characteristics of weak leaders. I want to share with you what they are and how not to be one of them. I also want to discuss what to do if you work for someone who is a weak leader. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Platform University, an online membership site for helping you launch your personal platform or take it to the next level. You'll find out more at platformuniversity.com. So let's dive into this episode. You know, sometimes you learn from positive role models, and often you learn from negative ones. And unfortunately, I've worked for more weak leaders than strong ones, and my guess is you have too. Regardless, you can learn just as much from a weak leader, maybe even more so. But this is one of the reasons I love to read history. You inevitably get both weak leaders and strong ones. Well, after watching Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln, I decided to review the book Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin. I had read the book a few years ago, but it's a page-turning account of Abraham Lincoln's presidency and his political genius. But at the beginning of Lincoln's first term, he appointed each of his former Republican rivals, those who had run against him for his party's nomination, to cabinet posts. And this is really extraordinary when you think about it. You would have to be incredibly secure in your own leadership to do that. Well, Goodwin's book demonstrates Lincoln's amazing ability to tap into a broad array of perspectives and create alignment among those who often disagreed violently with one another. But unfortunately, his leadership was not perfect. He occasionally selected men for public service who were unworthy of his trust, and one such individual was General George B. McClellan, commander of the Army of the Potomac, and eventually first general-in-chief of the Union Army. Well, General McClellan had significant character flaws, and the good news for us is that they serve as a warning sign to anyone in leadership. But ultimately, these flaws cost him dearly. He lost Lincoln's confidence, he lost his job, and he lost a run for the White House against Lincoln. And worse, his character flaws prolonged the Civil War and cost the lives of tens of thousands of soldiers on both sides of the conflict. Well, as I read this book, I jotted down five flaws that General McClellan illustrated and which can serve as a warning to us. Flaw number one. Hesitating to take definitive action. McClellan was constantly preparing, and according to him, the army was never quite ready. The troops just needed a little more training. But in his procrastination, he refused to engage the enemy, even when he clearly had the advantage. He could just not bring himself to launch an attack. Well, when Lincoln finally relieved him of his duties, he famously said, "If General McClellan does not wish to use the army, I would like to borrow it for a time." Well, I meet people all the time who seem to be forever preparing. You know, they'd like to launch a blog, they'd like to write a book, or they'd like to find another job, or they'd like to get married, but they just can't seem to pull the trigger. And if you've listened to this podcast for any length of time, you've heard me say this before, but perfectionism is the mother of procrastination. You're never going to find the perfect time or the perfect circumstances or be totally prepared. And one of the most important leadership qualities you can develop is practicing the art of the start. I'm not suggesting you shouldn't prepare. I am saying that at some point, you've got to kick into action and just do it. What is it you need to do that you have been procrastinating? Is it a difficult conversation you need to have? Is it someone you need to fire? And by the way, weak leaders hire fast and fire slow. Great leaders, strong leaders, hire slow and fire fast. Or maybe it's a phone call you need to make. Or is it a project you just need to approve? What is the next step? And by the way, what do you do if you work for someone who has this flaw? And I've worked for this guy a few times in my career, and it can be a miserable experience. Well, let me suggest a couple of things you can do. Number one, make a compelling case. Oftentimes, the fault is yours or mine. You've made the case badly, or perhaps you haven't made the case at all. Frankly, some people would rather complain about their boss because it lets them off the hook. I always assumed that if I couldn't get a yes, it was my fault, and that served me very, very well. And you might want to read my series of posts, How to Get Your Boss to Say Yes, and there's a link in the show notes to that short series of three posts. So number one, make a compelling case. Number two, accept responsibility for the outcome. I remember the first time I asked my boss for approval to offer an author $1 million advance. Well, he was understandably very hesitant. He had all kinds of objections, and he should have. But finally, he asked me, Michael, if this was your mother's money, would you make the investment? And I said, absolutely. The bottom line was that he wanted to make sure I was fully committed. And by the way, that was a very good investment for the company. Number three, have a frank discussion. And this takes courage. I've only had to do it once, but I framed it in terms of how my boss's hesitancy to take action was not just hurting me and my team, but it was ultimately detrimental to the company and was hurting him. This kind of approach works. And then number four, employ the negative option. Now, this is a direct response advertising term, but it means that you tell someone what you're going to do unless they explicitly tell you no. For example, you might send an email that says something like this: attached is the cost justification for purchasing the new video camera for my department. Unless I hear from you by 5 p.m. tomorrow, I will assume this meets with your approval and go ahead and order the camera. Now, you got to be careful with this. This can be interpreted as coercive. It works great with people that work for you. It works great for peers. But with your boss, you've got to be careful. But nevertheless, sometimes this is the only way you can get any forward movement. And the issue is they don't want to take responsibility, but they're perfectly happy for you to take responsibility for it. So the first flaw, let me just repeat it again, was hesitating to take definitive action. You don't want to be guilty of that. You want to take definitive action, and I've given you some clues or some recommendations for what if you find yourself working for that person. A second flaw that General McClellan has was complaining about a lack of resources. Now, he constantly complained about the lack of available resources. He didn't have enough men. His men weren't paid enough. They didn't have enough heavy artillery, and on he went. The truth is that as a leader, you never have enough resources. You could always use more of this or that. And I mean, really, have you ever met a leader who said, you know, my budget is just too big. They've given me way more money than I can possibly spend. No, of course not. You can go to any company in any industry, and I guarantee you, you will never, ever hear anyone say this. Everyone complains of a lack of resources. And that's because we live in a world of limited resources. But the one thing that is unlimited is your imagination. Ultimately, there's no such thing as a lack of limited resources. There are only unresourceful people. Successful leaders figure out how to get the job done with the resources they have. Now, again, I think complaining about a lack of resources can be a subtle way of letting yourself off the hook. You can cast yourself as the victim, but I can promise you this. Leaders who do this never get very far. I don't care if you own your own business or you're leading a department or a division in a major corporation. You were hired to deliver an outcome, and your job is to figure out how to get the resources. And never forget that resources follow vision. If you have a compelling vision, you will attract the resources you need. And it never happens, in my experience at least, the other way around. So let me ask you a hard question. Have you been complaining about a lack of resources? If so, you're on dangerous ground. Maybe you need to focus on getting a clearer, more compelling vision and then presenting it in a way that attracts the resources. Now, what do you do if you're working for this kind of person, a leader who is always complaining about a lack of resources? Well, let me suggest a couple of steps. One, refuse to join in on the complaining. Change the subject if you have to, But don't let this kind of scarcity mentality, this kind of negative thinking, infect your spirit. You don't have to reprove your boss or make him feel small. Just change the subject. Number two, focus on the resources you have. Say something like, yes, it would be helpful if we had gotten approval from corporate for more money, but thankfully we have a very creative team. We'll figure it out. Third suggestion, be an example. Is it possible to lead your boss? Absolutely. Remember, leadership is influence, and you can influence anyone. This is what it's really about when you talk about leading from the middle. The best leaders infect everyone. This kind of situation is a great opportunity for you to hone your leadership skills, take it to the next level, and be able even to influence your boss. So flaw number two is complaining about a lack of resources. Don't be guilty of it yourself. Flaw number three, refusing to take responsibility. Now, McClellan blamed everyone else for his mistakes and for his refusal to act. He even blamed President Lincoln. Every time he suffered a defeat or a setback, someone or something else was to blame. He was a master finger pointer. Great leaders don't do this. They are accountable for the results and accept full responsibility for the outcomes. You know, years ago when I was the CEO of Thomas Nelson, we missed our sales budget for the month. And I was meeting with Eileen Meething, a consultant from Gap International, and she asked, so how did July turn out? Did you make your revenue budget? Well, I did what most CEOs do in this situation. I blamed the current economic environment. Here's what I said. I said, well, the market is tough right now. Gas prices are up. So are interest rates. This has taken a bite out of discretionary spending. Consumers are just not frequenting bookstores like we had hoped. And then I went on to cite the U.S. Census Bureau and Publishers Weekly and other industry publications. Well, I finished with what I thought was a note of optimism. I said, well, we didn't do what we had hoped, but we're still ahead of last year. She then said, interestingly, okay, I get the environment is tough, but let's be honest. It's always tough, right? Michael, what is it about your leadership that led to this outcome? Whoa. Excuse me, I replied, knowing full well what she had asked. Nevertheless, she gently repeated the question. Honestly, I think I was speechless for a full 2 minutes. Well, I'm not exactly sure, I stammered. I felt defensive. That's a great question, but I don't know quite what to say. Well, thankfully, she gave me a little help. Here's what she said. She said, well, as long as the problem is out there, you can't fix it. You're just a victim. I'm not trying to shame you. I'm trying to empower you, she said. You can't change your results until you accept full responsibility for them. Well, I nodded in agreement, still not sure if I liked what I was hearing. And she patiently, though, waited for the weight of her observation to sink in. And then we spent the next couple of hours examining my behavior. And as it turns out, I was not only making excuses for myself, I was making excuses for my team. I was too easily letting them off the hook. And I slowly began to see a direct link between my leadership and our operating results as a company. Now, the bad news about taking responsibility is that you can't blame someone else. It always comes down to your leadership. There's always something else you could have said or done to produce a different result. But get this, the good news is that once you accept responsibility, you can change the result. Why? Because your behavior as a leader is 100% under your control. Changing the result is as simple or as hard as changing your behavior. Imagine how differently your family, church, company, or even the country could be different if everyone took personal responsibility for their outcomes. So what about you? Are you fully owning the results you're producing? What about the lack of results? I just want to challenge you to take full responsibility. No excuses, no blaming, just own it. And by the way, I have a post on this in my blog where I give a concrete example of how real leaders demonstrate accountability in a corporate environment. The article's called Leadership and Accountability, and again, there's a link in the show notes. Now, what if you work for someone with this flaw and they refuse to accept responsibility? A couple of suggestions here. Number one, don't imitate the behavior. What you imitate, you will ultimately replicate. And if you follow your boss's lead and refuse to take responsibility, you'll create a culture where excuses are acceptable and blaming circumstances and other people is the norm. You don't want that, so don't imitate this behavior. Recommendation number two, accept full responsibility. I once had a boss that everyone thought was impossible to work for. The truth is, he just wanted people to take responsibility. And I noticed that when people refused, he'd beat them to a pulp, metaphorically speaking. But when someone took responsibility, you know what he did? That was the end of it. He moved on. So take responsibility. Beyond that, there's probably not a lot you can do. This is a case where you probably can't confront the issue directly, but don't despair. These kinds of leaders have a way of eventually disappearing. They don't last long. And I had one that I used to work for, and it was so frustrating because he would never take responsibility. It was always somebody else's fault. Well, he eventually ended up getting fired, and I got promoted to his position. So flaw number three is simply refusing to take responsibility. Don't be guilty of it. Flaw number four, abusing the privileges of leadership. You know, while his troops were struggling in almost unbearable conditions, General McClellan lived in near royal splendor. He spent almost every evening entertaining guests with elaborate dinners and parties. He insisted on the best clothes and accommodations, but his lifestyle stood in distinct contrast to his eventual successor, General Ulysses S. Grant, who often traveled with only a toothbrush. Frankly, I haven't encountered this too many times. This is one of the reasons why I like working in the private sector, and I know it happens. I'm sure there's a lot of abuse, but I think it probably happens less because there is now so much accountability. I remember back in the last century where there were a lot of CEOs who used corporate assets as though they were their own, but this has largely disappeared. I'm not saying it doesn't happen here and there, but it's tougher for it to happen because of all the regulation and the scrutiny that's been put on private companies. But the one place where this seems to be routinely abused is government, especially the federal government. I'm not saying that everybody who's in federal government is a crook or is abusing it, but there sure seems that a lot of this is going on. And it really irritates me, especially as a taxpayer, especially this time of year. I don't want to get started on this because I want to stay positive, but honestly, it's time that we, the people, demanded accountability from our government. Given the soaring federal debt, this is not only unsustainable, it's really criminal. The real point I want to make is that leadership is first and foremost a stewardship. We never hold it for ourselves. We hold it on behalf of someone else. If you've been given a position of leadership, or if you have the gift of leadership, it's to serve, and you're accountable. And if you abuse it, you'll eventually lose it, as General McClellan did. Well, what if you're working for someone with this character flaw, the tendency to abuse the privileges of leadership? Well, I don't really have anything new to offer here other than set your own standard. Don't let his or her behavior be your standard. I know when I was the CEO of Thomas Nelson, I always thought, if a reporter or a private investigator was following me around, how would the choices I'm making today look if they were on the front page of the Wall Street Journal? Eventually, these things have a way of coming to light, and you need to live with that prospect in clear view. So flaw number four, abusing the privileges of leadership, don't be guilty of it. Flaw number five, engaging in acts of insubordination. You know, McClellan openly and continually criticized the president, who was his boss, and he was passive-aggressive about it. Even when Lincoln gave him a direct order, he found a way to avoid obeying it. And in his arrogance, he always knew better than the president, and he had a ready excuse to rationalize his lack of follow-through. You know, it's never a good idea to criticize your boss in public. It's an even worse idea to talk about him or her to the media. If you do, don't be surprised if you get fired. You're asking for it. This happened to General Douglas MacArthur. It even happened to General Stanley McChrystal. And of course, it happened to General George McClellan. But as Solomon observed thousands of years ago, do not curse the king, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, even in your bedroom. For a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Ecclesiastes 10:20. You know, people in authority eventually find out. And when they do, you might discover you're not quite that indispensable. McClellan, MacArthur, and McChrystal all lost their jobs for insubordination. Well, let me ask you this. Do you have a problem with your boss? Are you tempted to insubordination? Let me suggest an alternative approach. First, give your boss the benefit of the doubt. Your perspective is limited. You're only seeing one side of the issue. Maybe you've misunderstood, and you can never go wrong by assuming the best. Number two, don't speak negatively of your boss in public. And as a leader, you're setting an example. If you criticize your boss, your people will criticize you. You'll replicate your behavior. Don't sow the seeds of disloyalty or even discontent on your own team. And if you criticize your boss in public, that's exactly what you're doing. It will come back to bite you. I can guarantee it. Number three, meet with your boss in private and state your concerns. Do it with courage, with candor, with respect. And if he's a competent leader, he'll listen carefully and he'll act appropriately. Even if he or she doesn't, you've done the honorable thing. And if you disagree with your boss's direction and feel deeply about it, then resign. The cowardly thing is to bite the hand that feeds you. Either support the boss publicly or find somewhere else to work. This really comes down to a matter of integrity from my point of view. Even if your boss is incompetent, you have the duty to respect him. If you can't do that, you need to resign. Speaking out publicly while you're still employed is just not an option, and it's not very smart. Well, what do you do if you work for a leader with this flaw, the tendency towards insubordination? Again, I would say to you, and again, this isn't new. It's really the point I've made each time, but don't imitate your boss. Don't join in on disrespecting his boss. Change the subject if you have to. Refuse to participate. This is absolute poison. It can be lethal to your career and to your own leadership and to the results you're trying to attain as a leader. So President Lincoln had the patience of Job. He gave General McClellan numerous opportunities to correct his behavior and to redeem himself. But in the end, McClellan either could not or would not do so. And he left the president no choice but to relieve him of his duties. These same character flaws afflict, unfortunately, many leaders today. And the best safeguard, I think, is self-awareness. And by the way, you may want to listen to this episode with your team and then discuss it so you can work together on avoiding these flaws and conversely building the corresponding strengths into your own leadership and into the leadership culture you're trying to create. So with that, let's get to some listener questions. The first one comes from Alan.
Hi, Michael. It's Alan Williams here. I blog and write at tontowilliams.com. My question for you is, I'm a relatively new leader in a senior position in an organisation that I've been working in for some time. I'd like to think that I'm doing a good job, but you never know. I wonder if you've got any words of advice or tips for me. Love what you're doing, Michael. Thanks very much. Bye.
Alan, I would recommend asking your boss. Now, don't be annoying about this, like you're asking every week, how am I doing, because that will convey insecurity. But I think it's totally appropriate, especially after every major initiative, or occasionally to ask your boss, how am I doing? Is there anything that you see that I can improve on? Because I want to do a great job for you. I want to do a great job for the company. And I think that if you think of your boss as your number one client or customer, you won't go astray. If you were running a company and you had clients, you would occasionally survey them on the job they were doing so that you could do a better job. And I think that's entirely appropriate to do with your boss. The other thing I would suggest too is that occasionally you should do what's called a 360, but ask your peers and your subordinates how you're doing. And there are companies that can administrate this for you to make it an objective process. And sometimes you may even want it to be an anonymous process so people can be really honest about it. But I've done that a couple times in my own career, and it's been enormously helpful. This is why they call them blind spots, because you can't often see the problems that you have, but other people can see them. They're very apparent to them. And if you ask and make it safe for them to respond, they'll do so. The next question comes from Blessing.
My name is Blessing Mbofu from Johannesburg, South Africa. My blog is blessingmbofu.com. Not every leader is weak, and not every leader is strong in every area of leadership all the time. So, how do you lead people that are smarter and stronger than you in areas that you are not?
Blessing, I love this question. And let me just say this. If you're not leading people that are smarter and more competent than you are, you've got the wrong team. That's really the objective as a leader, is to hire superstars, find people that are better than you are so that you can enlarge your ability as an organization and really go after those big, hairy, audacious goals. And I think you've got to think of yourself as a leader. You've got to reframe that. Your job is not to be smarter. Your job is not to be stronger. What your job is to be is like a symphony conductor. What you're trying to do is to call up the appropriate instrument at the appropriate time so that together you make the best music possible. And I've got a post on this, a great post, I think, called 8 Leadership Lessons from a Symphony Conductor. And I've got a link in the show notes. But I think that will help you reframe your role. Great question, though. And it's something that every leader needs to really reshape their own thinking about their role and what it is within the organization. The next question comes from Brandon.
Hello, Michael. My name is Brandon Jones. I'm calling from Victorville, California. My website is leadershipdoneright.com. I know a leader that seems to have a Jekyll and Hyde personality. One minute, he's the best boss you ever had, and the next, he is screaming at you and tearing you down. People seem to walk on eggshells around him because they never know which leader they're going to get. What recommendations do you have for working with someone like this? Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts.
Brandon, I've worked for this guy. I think probably all of us had. If you haven't had a boss like this, you've had a client like this, and I've had both. But it's not that uncommon. In fact, it's pretty normal for us to experience that. And it's a great opportunity, because if you can learn to lead with a boss or a client like that, it can do extraordinary things for growing your leadership. And I think it really makes you pay attention, for starters. And one of the things I tried to do when I was working for this kind of person was just to be steady, you know, to be unflinching, right? Whether he was raging or pensive, I just tried to be the same person in both situations, to not overreact. There's a verse in the Bible where it says a gentle answer turns away wrath. And I think that's really true. And I always tried to give a gentle answer, not to escalate it, but to just give a gentle answer, a fact-based answer, to really be focused on the results and really be focused on what he was after ultimately as well. And ultimately, while I continued to see that behavior with other people, he really didn't engage in it with me, because I think he could trust me. He knew I took full responsibility for my outcomes, and it made it much easier for him to be calm in my presence. So anyway, just a couple of ideas. The next question comes from James.
Hi, Michael. This is James Devine from Colorado Springs. I blog at jazzysaxman.com. I've been a student of leadership for many years, and so I'm really intrigued by this upcoming podcast. I'm a teacher in the public school system, and because of some of the things I do, I often make waves, not just to make waves, but to try to improve the education for the students. What I find is that a lot of my leaders, I would basically describe them as cowards, and as soon as you make a wave, then they get all nervous. How can I overcome that and maybe help to get things done and help make things better and maybe help those leaders to become better too? Thank you so much for your time.
James, again, I think this is common behavior. I mean, I think that most leaders, unfortunately, aren't courageous, which is an opportunity for us too, if we are willing to be courageous. And by the way, being courageous doesn't mean that you don't have fear. It means that you're willing to act in spite of your fear. Every courageous person I've ever known struggled with fear, but they were willing to act in spite of that fear, and that's what made them courageous. But I think one of the things that we can do is just encourage our teammates, that when they do something that is courageous or when they get out there a little bit, just affirm it. I really believe that we get more of what we notice, more of what we focus on, and all of us need inspiration. Being a leader is a scary proposition. We're often out there alone, and the more that we can be with people, encourage people, affirm them for what they're doing right, the more courage they will get. After all, isn't that the root of the word encouragement, is to give someone the gift of courage? Well, we can do that, and I think it's a great gift to cultivate in our own leadership, is the ability to give other people courage to do what they need to do. The next question comes from Jonathan.
Hi, Michael. This is Jonathan Lazar, and my website is jonathanlazar.com. Being in private chiropractic practice for the last 5 years has proven to be an extremely fantastic opportunity for me to grow my leadership. I thought I would just be able to take care of patients every day. And while that's a huge part of what I do, an equally huge part of what I do is lead an incredible team. My question for you is, there's a balance between having the right people on the bus, proper training, and taking 100% responsibility as a leader. And my question for you is, how can I make sure that I'm not being a weak leader, creating confusion, lack of clarity, those sort of things? And how do I know the difference between that, whether I need to take responsibility and strengthen my leadership, versus just simply not having the right people on the bus, whether we're dealing with incompetence or the wrong role or something like that? Thanks so much for everything you're doing. I'm very grateful. Keep up the great work. God is using you in huge ways, and I'm honored just to be able to be one of your followers. Keep up the great work, Michael. Bye-bye.
Jonathan, this is a great and a very perceptive question. How do you know if the problem is you as a leader and you just need to grow, or if the problem is really an employee who needs to go? I would say the first thing you've got to have is a training and development, and really even before that, a hiring process in place, so that you hire the very best people and you make sure that they get the training and the development they need to really excel. And if you haven't read The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes, I want to recommend it to you. It's a fantastic book. It's about sales, but it's really about running a company, whether it's your own business or running a division or a department, whatever it is. It's really about leadership, and it's a terrific book, but he talks about having a system in place for making sure that people get trained. And he also talks about having a system in place for hiring superstars and making sure that you get the right people on the bus to begin with. Now, if you're in a situation where you're not sure, you've got to have a process for either remediating someone's behavior or helping them get along to their next assignment or letting them go. And that's got to be a process too. You just can't up and fire somebody one day. I mean, I don't think it's fair to them, because they may just be lacking something in their training that you can supply. So I think it's worth having, first of all, a conversation with them. Tell them what your expectations are. Be absolutely crystal clear on that. Ask them if you can help them get the training. Set up those situations where they can get the training that they need. If there's not improvement then, after you've done some of these things, then you can begin to move with the idea that the issue is not you, it's them. You've provided what is necessary. And I always go through the process of self-examination whenever I've got a problem with somebody else. Has it been something in my leadership that's created this, or is it really something in their ability to follow, to learn, to grow in their own leadership? But it's a great question, and there's not really a science to it so much as there is an art in the application. But I would read Chet's book. It's a terrific book, and I think it will help you in this situation. The next question comes from Joseph.
Hi, Michael. This is Joe Iliff, and I blog at seekoutwisdom.blogspot.com. When I think of a weak leader, I think of someone who's too quick to make excuses and too slow to accept blame. Maintaining the illusion of perfectionism just tells your followers you're not in touch with reality. I wonder if you've had any experience with this. Thanks for the great podcast.
Yeah, I've had quite a bit of experience with this, Joe, and I gave some of that in the main body of this podcast. But I would also say this is the norm, so I wouldn't be surprised when you see it happen. I think the best way to deal with it, though, is to be vulnerable yourself, be quick to take responsibility, be slow to blame others, and just model the behavior that you want in other people. And I think that others will find that attractive, and at least the people who are downstream from you will begin to replicate it. And that's, by the way, how you change culture, is change your own behavior. I found that in almost every situation I've been in, is that if I'm just consistent in changing my own behavior and then articulating my expectations, particularly on the part of my team members, then I can have a reasonable expectation that they will change and the culture will shift. But you have to be clear, and you have to be patient, and you have to take the initiative. The next question comes from Kent.
Hey, Michael. My name is Kent Lapp. I blog on life lessons learned from business, leadership, and paying attention over at kentlapp.com. My question for you is, what do you do if you feel like you're working for a weak leader? What do you do if you feel like your leadership is maybe a bit more developed than your leaders? Love to hear from you. Thanks for what you're doing. Totally dig it, so keep it up. Thank you, Michael.
Well, Kent, I think this is pretty common too. I think it's not uncommon, if you study leadership, if you're trying to grow leadership, that inevitably you'll be working for someone whose leadership is a bit, shall we say, challenged, something that you don't feel is as far along as it should be. I would just challenge you to decide that you're going to learn from that person anyway. There's probably some things that they do well, some things that you may have to scratch for and study to get, but try to figure those out. Be fascinated with your boss or the person you're working for and try to discover what you can learn from them. Now, I personally believe that we don't end up in situations that are accidental, that there's a purpose in them. So if I'm working for this leader, there's either something I need to learn or something that I'm going to be able to use later. So I want to pay attention. My own belief is that he who is faithful in little is faithful also in much. And we're not going to be given the much until we're faithful in what is the little thing. And you can look again in the Bible, is a great example of Joseph, who was working for a bunch of guys that were unethical or difficult to work for. And, you know, he just was faithful in those situations. And eventually God promoted him and he got more responsibility. So, you know, I don't know if you share that same faith perspective. It doesn't matter. I think the principle is at work regardless. So I would milk that situation for what you can get out of it. Be a good steward of the experience and you'll be given more later. The next and last question comes from Robert.
Hi, Michael. My name is Robert Farrington, and I just recently launched my platform at beatthe9to5.com. I was calling because I actually work for someone that is a brand new leader and just was promoted into that position. And my question is, I'm at a point in my career where I feel comfortable giving upward feedback, but do you have any tips on giving upward feedback to new leaders or maybe external hires to the company that are having trouble adapting? Thanks, Michael. I look forward to your response.
Robert, what a great question to ask. Yeah, I would say that the most important thing is to be helpful, be a servant, ask yourself the question, what would it be helpful for them to know? How can I introduce them to my contacts? How can I help them get up to speed more quickly? Just one quick idea is that I've got a document now in Evernote that has a list of everybody on my team, what they do, their contact information, a little bit about their family. But when we bring somebody new on the team, I give them access. I share the link to that particular note so they can get up to speed quickly so that they don't have to stumble their way through making these associations, making these contacts, that they have those from day one. So that's just a little way you can do it, but get creative. How can you serve them? How can you help them? Well, let me leave you with this question before we get into some announcements. And that is, do you see any of these five flaws in your own leadership? Be honest. Where are you struggling? And I would love to hear from you. And to comment on this episode, go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com/048, as in episode 48. And you can leave a comment. Again, the question is, do you see any of these five flaws in your own leadership? Three quick announcements. My business partner, Ken Davis, and I will be hosting the SCORE Conference May 6 through 9 at the beautiful Rosen Plaza Hotel in Orlando, Florida. I can't wait. This is like my favorite conference of the year. But whether you're a professional speaker or you just want to be, this conference will teach you how to prepare with focus, deliver with confidence, and speak with power. Bottom line, it's a conference designed to maximize the impact of your speeches if you're a public speaker or aspire to be. And honestly, this conference has had a bigger impact on my career than any other conference I've ever attended. It's revolutionized my speaking. It's influenced every aspect of my communication, including my blogging and podcasting. And if you're serious about becoming a better speaker, you simply must attend. And you can find out more at scoreconference.tv, and SCORE is spelled with two R's, scoreconference.tv. You can find a link again in the show notes. Second announcement, by the way, if you're considering launching your own platform, you need to start with self-hosted WordPress. This is not as complicated as it sounds. In fact, I put together a step-by-step screencast on exactly how to do it. You don't need any technical knowledge. I walk you through the entire process in exactly 20 minutes. And for a limited time, Bluehost, the hosting company I personally recommend, is offering an amazing deal to my listeners. You can get web hosting, get this, for as little as $3.95 a month. And you can find out more by going to michaelhyatt.com/WordPress setup. Finally, my next podcast will be on the subject of the three ingredients of job satisfaction. And I'm going to talk about what they are, and how to make sure they're part of your job. And if you have a question about this topic, please leave me a voicemail at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. This is a terrific way to cross-promote your blog or website because I'll link to it just like I did with the callers in this episode. Well, that's it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I'd be so grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. If you've already done that, thank you so much. I'm very grateful. This helps keep my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. If you'd like to comment on this episode, again, go to michaelhyatt.com/048. Go to the show notes for this episode. Go to the comment section. I'd love to hear from you, whether it's a comment, a question, or even if you disagree with me. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? This is your life. Is everything you dream it would be when the world was younger and you had everything?